Okay, good morning. Welcome back. Hope everybody's Yom Tov was nice. Last year, as you probably recall, we went through the first parak of Pirkei Avos, the first chapter of Pirkei Avos. So with the Yom Tovim behind us and the new year upon us, I wanted to start the second parak of Pirkei Avos and to go through slowly and methodically as we went through the first parak last year. So the second parak begins in the Arskos Siddurim on page 550. And it starts off with the statement, Rebbe Omer, 550 in the Arskos Siddurim. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe used to say, Ezu derech yeshara sheyavar lo ha'adam. What is the proper path that a man should choose for himself? Kol she tiferes le'osel, v'tiferes lo min ha'adam. Art School translates, whatever is a credit to himself and earns him the esteem of fellow men. There's a lot to talk about here, even before we go through the rest of the Mishnah. This line which we read just now is subject to many, many different interpretations. It's not clear at all what Rebbe is saying with this statement. But before we do that, let's just start with a little bit of biographical information about the author of this Mishnah, Rebbe, who's referred to without any names, just the Rebbe, you know, Rebbe Omer. And we'll talk a little bit about him and why he starts off the second chapter of the Mishnayos. Rebbe, of course, is one of the terms that's used for Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, who lived around the year 200 of the Common Era, was a person who left an indelible impression upon all of future Jewish history. He was responsible for either the editing or perhaps even the writing of the Mishnayos. He put the Shisha Sidri Mishnah down into writing. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had a very fascinating career. He was born, according to the Gemara in Kiddushin, the very same day that the Tana Rabbi Akiva was put to death by the Romans. And that, of course, the Gemara says, is the sign of the fact that even as one sun is setting, another sun is already rising. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always preparing. This is a Perek Beis Mishnah Aleph, the first Mishnah in the second Perek. You know, this is a sign, again, as Chazal tell us, that, you know, even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always preparing the leaders of the Jewish people, even when one sun is setting, the next sun is already rising. Rabbi Akiva was killed because he was practicing Judaism during the period of the Hadrianic persecutions, when the Emperor Hadrian was trying to snuff out the Jewish religion. And one of those gzeros, one of the decrees that was made during that time was that Jewish children were not allowed to be circumcised. They prohibited bris milah. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, was born into the world as the son of the Nasi of Shimon ben Gamliel. Right? So that's sort of the connection between Perek Aleph and Perek Beis and Pirkei Avos. At the very end of Perek Aleph, we read a statement from Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Al Shlosh Advar Ha'olam Kayam. And then when we turn the page to the second Perek, Rebbe, who starts off the second Perek, is the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who had finished off the last Perek. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was born to the wife of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And of course, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was the Nasi, you know, the head of the Jewish people, the head of the Sanhedrin. Of course, there was no question they were going to give Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi a bris. That wasn't up for discussion. But the question now became, you know, how to maneuver around the Romans, who were certainly, when the news went out that the head of the Jewish people, the head of the Sanhedrin, had a boy, you know, the Romans were certainly suspicious that he was going to give him a bris milah, and they demanded that, you know, Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel come in to see the local Roman officials with their son so they could check and see whether he was circumcised. So there's a tradition that Rebbe Shimon Gamliel was very friendly with a local Roman woman, a noble woman, And basically this noble woman agreed to, this noble woman had just had a baby boy right around the same time, and this noble woman agreed with Rebbetzin Shimon ben Gamliel that they would temporarily switch children. Rebbetzin Shimon ben Gamliel would bring this Roman child to see the Roman governor. That child, of course, was uncircumcised. You know, they check off, okay, you're a good, you know, you adhere to all of the laws of the Roman Empire, that's good, that's wonderful, and everything would work out well. So they did that, and of course, the life of this little child who would grow up to be Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi was saved as a result. That Roman baby grew up to be someone Chazal referred to as Antoninus. Antoninus ultimately became the emperor of Rome. There's some discussion as to which emperor he was exactly. We know one of the emperors of Rome was called Antoninus Pius. There was another emperor of Rome around the same time, Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius was known to be a great philosopher. You know, so the descriptions we have of Antoninus, also you have to remember Roman emperors had like, you know, 15 different names. Whenever they got an aliyah, it was always very, very difficult. You know, half the Roman emperors were named Antoninus. You know, that was one of their 15 names. So it's a little bit hard to identify exactly which one it was. But Marcus Aurelius was a philosopher. He was a person who was an intellectual, a thinker. And what Chazal tell us about the interactions that took place between Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and this emperor Antoninus over the course of time certainly give us the impression that this Antoninus was a very thoughtful and philosophically minded individual. We have a tradition that eventually he converted to Judaism at the end of the day, which I don't know that we have a secular tradition about Marcus Aurelius converting to Judaism, but again, he would have kept it secret had something like that indeed happened. So in the end of the day, you know, these two little babies grew up to be incredibly close with one another, and you know, it's not coincidental that one of them was the leader of the Jewish people, one of them was the leader of the Roman Empire, and they maintained that friendship, you know, throughout the rest of their lives. The little Yehuda, who would eventually become Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, was recognized at a young age as being precocious. He traveled around Eretz Yisrael learning by all five of the great Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Remember, Rabbi Akiva himself was murdered on the day on which Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was born, but he left behind five of the great Talmidim who ultimately were pivotal in expressing the views that are brought in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, as a young child, learned by all five of these great Tanoim and was held in great esteem to the point where, as the Gemara relates, as a bar mitzvah boy, he laned Megillah for the Tana Rabbi Yehuda ben Eloy, right? Which, again, was a covet, obviously. Rabbi Yehuda ben Eloy could have laned Megillah for himself, but he wanted to be mechabed this young, precocious, you know, 13-year-old boy, you know, to lane for him. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi grew to such heights that his Talmidim eventually just started referring to him as Rebbe, in other words, the Rav par excellence, and everybody knew who that was. He was so clearly the Gadol B'Yisrael at that particular time that there was no need to even attach a name to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. They just called him Rebbe, you know, the Rebbe, and everybody knew right off the top of their heads, you know, to which Rebbe we're referring. He was so distinctive in that particular way. Chazal tell us that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had tremendous wealth. He was so wealthy that he was able to distribute huge amounts of tzedakah in order to provide for all of the Talmidei Chachamim who needed it at that particular time. And yet, the Gemara relates that on the day when he was dying, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi picked up his 10 fingers to the heavens, and he said, the Ribbono Shel Olam can give testimony about me that even my little finger didn't derive any personal pleasure from this world. In other words, you know, whatever wealth I had in this world was used exclusively by me for the purposes of Torah, of Ruchnius. You know, there was nothing personal that I gained from all of the wealth which I accumulated. And that the Rambam writes is the reason that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is sometimes referred to as well as Rabbeinu HaKadosh, our holy Rebbe. What makes him a Kadosh? What makes anybody a Kadosh? What, the other Tanoim, you know, we're not Kadosh. What do you mean? This is the holy Rebbe. The other Rebbeim are not. It means that here's someone who, despite having so much wealth, was nonetheless able to be totally disinterested in Olam Hazeh, in worldly things, for his own benefit. You know, clearly he was involved in the world. He was representing the Jewish people. He was interacting with the Romans on a regular basis on behalf of the Jewish people. He was distributing tzedakah. He wasn't a hermit by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, any involvement that he had in this world, he saw as simply being for the purposes of advancing the cause of Torah, of mitzvahs, of Yiddishkeit. And the Rambam says that's why it's called Rabbeinu HaKadosh. You know, Kadosh means to be parush, to be separated from the from the frivolities of this world. As much as it would have been so easy for Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi to be involved in the world, he had it all. Nonetheless, none of it made any difference to him. Everything was, you know, he was totally separated and totally involved in ruchnius and spirituality. The Chazal say that since the days of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, we've never since found Torah ugdula b'makom echad, Torah greatness and worldly greatness, you know, wealth, power, prestige, concentrated in one person in quite the same way. So, you know, we're talking about somebody who, you know, was really, you know, even among the Tanoim, was in a category by himself, if one can say such a thing. You know, really is seen as unique, even among the rest of the Tanoim, being in a very, very unique kind of position. And it's not surprising that the Hashgacha had it that Davka, this individual, was the most qualified to be able to take an unprecedented step in Jewish history, namely to begin writing down the Torah Sheba Al Peh, to begin writing down the oral law. Really, strictly speaking, according to Halacha, the oral law that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai is supposed to remain exactly that. It's supposed to remain an oral law. It's not supposed to be written down. Whenever you write something down, you lose something of it. Right? I think we appreciate this very, very much today. You know, when so much of what used to be conveyed in conversations is now conveyed in the written word and in a very telegraphic kind of way, right? So very often you send somebody an email, a text, or something like that, you try to convey something, and sometimes you end up conveying exactly the opposite because, you know, there's certain nuances that can be captured in conversation that can't be captured in the written word, right? Sometimes you even send the opposite. A few days ago, I wrote somebody sent me, what I thought was an email from somebody else. And I asked him, how do you have this email? I wrote back to him. And he took it to mean, you know, how is it that you have my email? He thought I was like challenging him, you know, what are you doing writing to me? So he started being all apologetic, you know, I mean, you wrote to me before with this email, that's how I have your email. I said, no, I meant, how do you have the email that you're forwarding to me? How do you have that particular text? But it's so easy, you know, when you're writing something down in a very, yes, very easy to misinterpret things. So, you know, that perhaps is why, you know, the original plan was that most of the Torah would be Baal Peh, would be passed down from Rebbe to Talmud. It can't be misinterpreted, or can't be as easily misinterpreted that way. And it builds the bond between a Rebbe and a student. And yet, Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi saw that given the Roman persecutions, if the Torah Shebaal Peh was not written down in some form or another, Rachmana Litzlan, it would be lost. And given, you know, the choice between the two scenarios, writing down the Torah Shebaal Peh or losing the Torah Shebaal Peh, writing down the Torah Shebaal Peh was the lesser of the two evils in order to, you know, maintain the Torah for the future generation. So that you needed somebody with the broad shoulders, so to speak, of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you know. So you don't get that impression. In other words, again, if there was, certainly it's not recorded, you know, that there was a big fight or anything like that. And again, perhaps that's because of the great stature of Yehuda Hanasi. If he's behind, you know, the Gadol Hador is behind such a project, you know, it must be that, you know, it's a worthwhile project, it's a good project, even though it runs against everything that we've been doing in Yiddishkeit for the past, you know, many, many years, you know. So, again, perhaps that's why the but, you know, perhaps that's why the Hashgacha had somebody of the stature, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, writing down the Mishnah, because the truth is, perhaps only somebody of that stature could have pulled it off, you know, in terms of making such a bold but necessary move, you know, given what the alternative was. So, anyway, Klal Yisrael was blessed with this individual, this great Gadol B'Yisrael, and the second Perek starts off with a number of statements that he makes. So let's go back and take a look at the first of these statements, and we'll see how it's open to very widely divergent interpretations. Ezu derech yeshara shiyavor lo ha'adam. What is the proper path that a person should choose? Kol shi tiferes lo osel, the tiferes lo min ha'adam. Anything which represents the credit to himself, right, which brings glory to him, and brings glory to him from other people. So, what's the question, and what's the answer? Eizu derech yeshara shiyavar lo ha'adam, what's the proper path that a person should choose? I think there's a simple answer to that question. Follow the Torah. Right? Isn't that the simple answer to that question? What's the proper path that a person should choose? Follow the Torah. What's the other option over here? Right? So the question itself, you know, requires more elucidation. And then the answer is unclear. A person should choose the path which brings glory to him and brings glory from other people. What does that mean? You know, you should choose the path that gets you written up in the newspaper as to what a wonderful, incredible person you are. That doesn't sound like a very Jewish approach. You know, you should choose something.
Accept his words.
Mm-hmm.
And to that extent, that it would be glory to the others.
Okay. So let's start presenting some of the very varied ways that this line of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is understood. And again, I think we'll begin to appreciate that it's really open to tremendous interpretation. Probably one of the most famous interpretations of this passage is given by the Rambam. The Rambam, both in his commentary in the Mishnayos, right here on Pirkei Avos, and the Rambam also expands on this without relating it back to this Mishnah in the beginning, or towards the beginning of his Mishnah Torah, Ziyarah Chazaka, where the Rambam has a whole section called Hilchos Deos. Hilchos Deos means the laws pertaining to what we call today Midos, character traits. So the Rambam understands that this statement of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is about character traits. It's not so much about actions. And right off the bat, that's why one can talk about the derech yeshara shiyavor lo ha'adam, the proper path that a person should choose. When it comes to actions, our actions are fairly delineated by the Torah. In other words, should I eat this? Should I not eat this? Should I do this mitzvah? Should I not do this mitzvah? You know, the actions are fairly, you know, what I should do and what I shouldn't do is delineated to a large extent by the Torah. But what kind of midos should I have is a little bit more of an amorphous question, right? Right, okay, so we're supposed to have derech eretz, but what does derech eretz mean? In other words, if we had to quantify that, right, I mean, it's very hard, you know, and again, I think we know this educationally, you know, you tell a kid, you should be menschlich. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, tachlis, what does that mean? So, you know, we assume that either you know or you don't know, but, you know, if you don't know, just saying be menschlich doesn't necessarily, you know, convey all of that much. So the Rambam understands that what Yehuda HaNasi is saying is that in terms of midos that a person tries to inculcate in himself, he should always pick milos hamimutsaos, character traits that are moderate in the middle and not overly extreme. So, for instance, as the Rambam elaborates in Hilchos Deos, It's a good thing to give tzedakah, right? You know, a person shouldn't be stingy.
Okay, so you should give tzedakah. So I'm going to give away all of my money to tzedakah. Well, that's not such a smart thing to do either, because if you're going to give away all your money to tzedakah, you'll be left without support, right? A person should be, you know, easygoing and flexible. Okay, agreed. So you're a very easygoing, flexible person, and then you basically become a doormat where everybody walks over you because, you know, everybody knows you're the person who's so easygoing and flexible that you'll say yes to everything. Okay, so I should be inflexible. No, you shouldn't be inflexible either. You should be somewhere in the middle. In other words, when you try to figure out the kind of personality traits that are appropriate for you to adapt for yourself, look to be not so extreme. So,
not to show off, even with a trait, good traits,
right?
To have the good traits, but not show off.
Right. Okay. So that's another point. You know, but even there as well. In other words, on the one hand, you know, I could put this in contemporary terms, you're not supposed to be self-promotional. On the other hand, I could just put in contemporary terms, so you go and apply for a job. So they sit you down on the other side of the desk and they say, well, you know, so why do you think you're a good candidate for this job? And you say, well, the truth is, I really have no idea. I have no idea why you'd want to hire me. You know, Chotasi, Ovisi, Poshasi, I'm probably the worst candidate that ever sat in front of you. So again, you're not supposed to be self-promotional, but, you know, if you're going to be that self-effacing, you know, you're probably going to have a hard time finding a job. That's not going to work either. You know, in life, you have to chart a middle course. And, you know, that, I'll read to you from the Bartanura over here, where the Bartanura summarizes how the Rambam presents this in Hilchos Deos, at the very beginning of Hilchos Deos, that a person should pick a path that's tiferes le'osev, tiferes lo'la'ad min ha'adam. It's beautiful for the one who does it, and beautiful to other people. Sheyehei noach lo, v'yinochin b'nei adam imenu. Pick a path that is comfortable for you, but makes other people feel comfortable as well. The way that you can, you know, balance your own comfort with the comfort of those around you is to try to steer a path that's a middle path when it comes to midos. On the one hand, if you're extremely stingy, that's tiferes lo. That's glory for him. That gives him benefit because, you know, you end up, your bank account is just, at the end of the day, it's just where it was at the beginning of the day. So that's great for you. But other people don't have nice things to say about you if you never give any tzedakah. But if you're quick to always spend, so then, you'll be everybody's best friend, 100%. Yeah, they'll line up around your house, you know, and they'll laud you with all kinds of superlatives. Harav, Agon, Atzadik, Achasid, you know, and how much were you giving this year again? You know, they'll praise you to the high heavens. Aval eino tiferes le'osel. But then that's not a source of glory or credit to you, meaning in other words, you'll walk away at the end of the day taken advantage of. It's not comfortable for that person. Right? You're going to empty out your own bank account as a result. When it comes to midos in general, the middle of the road is the best way to handle things. Tiferes le'osel, tiferes lo min ha'adam. You should do things in a way that's not going to make you extremely uncomfortable. If you're a doormat that everybody takes advantage of all the time, in the end of the day, you will not get through life well as a result, even though everybody loves you. Yeah, of course they love you. They can take advantage of you whenever they want to. But if you're inflexible and never help people out, you know, so then people say, ah, you know, don't even bother that guy over there. You know, he never helps with any of the projects. He never helps with anything. He's a difficult person. Life is about balance, says the Rambam, and midos in particular are about balance. Now, mitzvot, you know, actions are not quite about balance in the same way. I mean, we would not suggest to somebody that you should always seek the middle of the road in the mitzvah of tefillin. Right? Tefillin has two parts, a shel yad and a shel rosh. You don't want to be an extremist. You don't want to not put on tefillin, but you don't want to be one of those, you know, very religious people who puts on both the shel yad and the shel rosh. So you know what? Just be like a middle of the road kind of guy. Put on the shel yad and not the shel rosh, or vice versa, right? But clearly that's silly, right? And clearly when it comes to mitzvos, you have to do what the mitzvah requires you to do. There's less room for personalizing or, you know, taking a middle road when it comes to mitzvos. But when it comes to midos, when it comes to the kind of character traits that a person should develop within himself or herself, having this kind of balance, balancing your needs with the needs of others, is essential if you're going to lead a healthy life. Right, right. No, not to stick out in some way. Sometimes people, when they quote this Rambam, they refer to the Rambam's doctrine of the Shvil Hazaha, of the golden mean. The Rambam himself does not actually use that term, but the idea is the Rambam's. You know, the idea that in life, you know, you should be balanced in terms of your relationships with others. I think maybe one way to express it is that, you know, you have to take care of yourself in addition to taking care of others, you know, and and you have to find that right balance in terms of how you deal with the world at large. Most of the midos that the Rambam is talking about in some way have to do with interpersonal relationships. And the Rambam would say, you know, this isn't my own idea. This is the idea that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is presenting here in the Mishnah. So this very fundamental idea in Midos Tovos that the Rambam presents, according to the Rambam, ultimately is the words of the Tana, you know, going back to Pirkei Avos.
So,
right, so you might be able to relate it to that as well. Again, there are many, many interpretations of that statement of Hillel and what he was driving at, but you know, one basic interpretation may be that. In other words, I have to take care of myself, I have to take care of my own needs. I can't be somebody who's going to just spend all my money, have people walk all over me and take advantage of me. At the same time, I'm not supposed to be indifferent, you know, to other people's needs and, you know, what they need in order to, you know, I want to help other people, I want to give money to other people, I want to, you know, be there for other people. I just have to find the right balance, you know, in terms of doing that. That's probably the most famous interpretation of this line in the Mishnah, and it serves as the basis, again, as we said before, for this whole approach of the Rambam. There are many other interpretations as well, so let's start going through some of them, and again, we'll see how these interpretations are so widely different from one another. The Abar Benel in Nachlos Avos understands that the statement of Rebbe is actually one that Rebbe does not want us to adopt. See, a statement that he wants us not to adopt? Why would he make a statement that he would not want a person to adopt? So the Barbanel points out that there's a very subtle change grammatically from the beginning of the Mishnah to the continuation of the Mishnah. The beginning of the Mishnah starts off, Ezu derech yishar shiyovar lo ha'adam. What is the proper path that a person should choose? Kol she tiferes le'osev tiferes lo min ha'adam. Right? Anything that is beautiful for you and beautiful for others. That's stated in the third person. What should a person choose? Then the Mishnah goes on to say, Ve'hevizor b'mitzvah kala kevachamura. You should be careful concerning a quote-unquote light mitzvah, just as you would concerning a quote-unquote heavy mitzvah, you know, a minor mitzvah versus a major mitzvah. Because you don't really know which mitzvah is the more major one and which mitzvah is the more minor one. Right? So that in itself is a whole discussion, which I'm not even sure we'll have time. We probably won't have time to get to that today. There's a lot in this Mishnah. But what's striking, says the Abar Benel, whatever that second line means, is that line is addressed in the second person. You know, you should calculate, you should be careful with a mitzvah that seems minor the same way you are with a mitzvah that seems like a major mitzvah. So how do we have that transition? We started off talking in the third person, and now we transitioned into the second person. So the Abar Benel makes the following statement. Rebbe is contrasting the way a moral, ethical person who does not have Torah looks at the world with a person who has Torah and the way he looks at the world.
What's there's no question mark, but he's saying that there's a
question mark. Right. So let's see how he reads it. Yabar Benel says, Rebbe says, Ezu Darach Yishar Shiyavar Lo Ha'adam. What would be the proper way that a person, now person in this context means not necessarily somebody Jewish, a thoughtful, ethical, non-Jewish individual, right? What would be the proper way that such an ethical person would look at the world? And again, remember, just go back to what we spoke about before. Rebbe certainly knew one such prominent individual, this Antoninus, who by all accounts was a thoughtful, sensitive, philosophically inclined non-Jew, who, again, his ruminations, you know, were largely about ethics and morals of the like. What would the Adam, what would the man in the street choose as being the proper way to lead his life? So the man in the street would choose Tiferes Le'osel, but Tiferes Le'mina Adam. He would choose an approach in life that gives the doer of the deed a sense of Tiferes, a sense of glory. In other words, this makes me feel good. And other people recognize this as being good as well. That would be the approach. Again, without Torah, the man in the street would embrace actions that make him feel just and seem to be recognized as just by the outside world. But that's when you operate based on Seichel. That's when you operate based on the human mind trying to divine what's the right thing and what's the wrong thing. Says Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, that's not how we work as Jews, right? That's what Ha'adam, that's what the guy out there, the man in the street, believes is the right thing to do. But as for you, Mr. Jewish person, who's reading my Mishnah, you should be Zoyer B'mitzvah Kalak V'Achamura. You don't apply your seichel to try to figure out, oh, this does make, you know, this mitzvah makes sense, this mitzvah doesn't make sense, this mitzvah is a little bit, you know, this is a bigger mitzvah, this is a lesser mitzvah, right? You know, so again, to be a nice person, yeah, the person on the street is going to be a nice person as well. Shiluach Hakam? So I don't really want those eggs or anything like that, but I'm going to go chase away that mother bird. Why? Don't ask questions. The Torah says that's what the Torah demands of you under this circumstance. So even though you don't understand it, and it's not something that's going to bring you any accolades, no one's standing on the side clapping, oh, you're the fellow, the Shiluach HaKam, what a fellow. You know, let's write that up in the newspaper. You know, even though you're not going to get those kind of accolades from that, the Torah approach is to look at what the Torah says to do, to not try to second guess, this is more important, this is less important. Hashem says do it, you just got to do it. There's a fundamental difference between the approach, you know, a non-Torah approach, even a moral, ethical Torah approach, and that approach which is put together by the Torah itself. So in other words, according to the Abar Benel, the statement of Rebbe, of Ezu Derech Yishar Shiyavar Lo Ha'adam, is actually something that's not normative for Jews. That's not something we're supposed to be following. That's meant to be contrasted with the Jewish approach to morals and ethics. Just as a biographical note, it's worth noting that the Abar Benel, as much as he was an incredibly worldly person, I mean, he was the finance minister of all of Spain. It's not like it's not like he had no dealings with the world at large, but he was incredibly opposed to trying to shoehorn our understanding of Torah into the philosophies which were very, very common and accepted at that time, particularly among the Jews in Spain, who tended to be much more worldly and much more in attune with the Greek philosophies that were still popular at that point in the Middle Ages. The Abar Benel, by reading Rebbe in this way, is basically saying Rebbe would not hold of this attempt to explain everything philosophically in the Torah and to try to, try to figure out on our own what makes more sense, what makes less sense. You know, Torah is about unflinching commitment you know, to what the Torah tells us to do. Mitzvah kalo, mitzvah chamura, you know, we don't make cheshbonos, we just do what the Torah tells us to do. And, you know, according to the Barbanel, Rebbe's approach over here is really just justifying, or is just the source of the whole perspective that that the Abarbanel advocated, you know, in his dealings with people. There's yet another interpretation of this Mishnah, a very, very different one, that's advocated by Reb Chaim Volozhin in his Ruach Chaim, his commentary on Pirkei Avos. And Reb Chaim Volozhin understands this Mishnah as teaching us that a person should always continue to learn Torah and do mitzvahs, even when he feels that his intentions are not so lishma. Right? So, you know, you can take two points of view on that issue. Let's, you know, obviously... Right. So, you know, the ideal in terms of our commitment to Torah mitzvahs, obviously, is to learn Torah and to do mitzvahs lishma, you know, for all the right reasons, because God commanded us to do them, because we want to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, the different definitions as to what lishma is, but for idealistic motivations, let's put it that way. But let's say a person doesn't feel up to doing things for the idealistic motivations. Let's say, for instance, one of the most common non-lishma, shalolishma motivations which a person might have. He wants the praise... What's that? Yeah, right. He wants the praise of the crowd. You know, he wants to be accepted. He wants to be lauded by the crowd. He wants people to talk about, that guy, he's such a tzaddik, he's such a masmid, he's such an unbelievable person, right? You know, no, please. If you could give me a little bit more, you know, that would be fine, right? You know, he enjoys the applause that comes from the crowd. So Rebbe says it's better to be involved in Torah and mitzvahs even for the wrong reasons, because at least you're involved in Torah and mitzvahs, as long as you realize that you have to work on getting to the right reasons. And he gives the following very, very unique interpretation. Ezu derech yishara sheyavor lo ha'adam. What's sheyavor? So we translated sheyavor, ours called translates sheyavor as he should choose. Right. But the truth is, really, the word in Hebrew for choosing is livchor. There's a ches which is missing in over there, right? It's not like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, you know, was paying by the letter. I mean, he could have put in a ches had he been so inclined. You know, so what's derech yishar sheyavor lo ha'adam? So sheyavor, says Reb Chaim Volozhin, really means to purify or to sift, like borer on Shabbos. What? Why is borer called borer? Because bar in Hebrew means pure. So to be borer really means to sift through something to purify it. And as you're removing the dross from this thing to make it more pure, those two words are related to one another. Bar, you know, the kichapayim uvar levav, asher lo nasal shav nafshi. Right, a person is bar levav, he's pure of heart. So ezu derech yishar sheyavor lo ha'adam, what is called a proper path, but a path that a person still has to work on purifying and making even better. Kol shetiferes le'osel v'tiferes lo min ha'adam. When a person performs Torah and mitzvot in a way that he's aware is bringing him tiferes min ha'adam, is bringing him glory and accolades from other people. That's not an ideal way to do Torah and mitzvot, but it's a legitimate way to do Torah and mitzvot. And if it's a choice between doing that and saying, I'm not going to be wholehearted in my pursuit of Torah and mitzvahs until I can get to a point of purity, that's a problem. Because, you know, what happens, says Reb Chaim Volozhin, is that let's take the example of Torah learning. If a person's learning Torah, even though it's not so lishma, but, you know, stick with it, Because as you stick with it, you'll develop that sense of lishma. Once you stop and you say, you know, until I do it 100% right, I'm not going to do it. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it at all. You know, you're going to end up, it's going to be that much harder to get back into it. So, you know, you like Shabbos because of the challah? Go for it, you know? Like, just do it. That's not the most pristine kavana in terms of Shabbos. Okay, but, you know, better to start with that, and then the involvement in Shabbos will bring you to a higher level. So that's what Rebbe says, it's a derech yishara, this is a legitimate path. Just shi'avar lo ha'adam, the person has to purify it and sift through the dross so he can get from the point of tiferes lo'osel, tiferes lo min ha'adam, where he's doing things to get tiferes, to get glory and to get accolades, to the point where he can do it more lishma for the ultimate sake, vevizar b'misvakalika v'chamura, where he can get to the point later on in the Mishnah where he's careful about everything because he understands what the real, you know, the real purpose of Torah Mitzvot is all about. There's a lot more to discuss. Be'ezus Hashem will pick up next week and continue making our way through these very different interpretations as to what the Rebbe is trying to share with us over here.